The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to Plan Your Estate Radio with your host, San Jose Estate Planning Attorney Bob Bergman. Bob's been practicing law for over 40 years and is certified by the State Bar of California as a legal specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. Bob is here to help you set your house in order with valuable insights you can use today to prepare a better tomorrow for your loved ones. And now your host for Plan Your Estate Radio, Attorney Bob Bergman.
Well, good afternoon, Bay Area. This is Estate Planning Attorney Bob Bergman broadcasting from my office in San Jose, California, in the Cambrian Park neighborhood on Ross Avenue near Hillsdale Avenue, if you're familiar with that part of San Jose. I thought I'd let you know right now that next Monday I will be out of town, and so the show next Monday will be pre-recorded. I will record it this week and then give it over to the station so that they can broadcast it next Monday. So just to let you know, it'll be a pre-recorded show. I haven't decided yet what the topic's going to be, but I'm pretty sure it'll be interesting to anyone listening, because it's just more education that I can pass on to people who want to learn about this and become better consumers of the services of estate planning attorneys such as myself. Now, I plan on today pretty much spending the entire show going over questions and comments from around the state of California. I have a big stack of them here. But I wanted to also urge you all, if you want to get better educated about estate planning and what I do, the best way is to start by watching one of my free webinars that can be accessed through my website. My website address is lawbob.com, lawbob.com. If you go there, you can actually click through where it says watch an estate planning webinar and then pick one of the two webinars that I have available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days of year, except in this year, 366, because it's a leap year. And you'll be able to get an education about what estate planning is, why we do estate planning, what my process is, what the fees are I charge for various levels of planning, and then instructions on for how to get in touch with me to start the planning process. So that's something that I make available. It's available 24 hours a day. There's no charge to register to watch one of the webinars. They're absolutely free, no obligation. I'm just trying to help people get better educated about what estate planning is and why it's important to do, and especially why it's important to do it well and properly. I tell you, the things that come into my office, the trust that I see that are really drafted poorly or have provisions in them that literally do not make sense. Most recently, a will brought into me that should have been a trust instead of a will because of the kinds of statements that are in it. And it also internally has a lot of contradictions, including making gifts to grandchildren in trust where there's a dollar amount written out in words and then a different dollar amount in parentheses. Excuse me. Specifically, $10,000 and then in parentheses, dollar sign, $15,000. So things like that, they're really not excusable and it creates problems. We're still sorting out whether or not I'm going to assist with this estate, but it's the kind of thing that we we deal with and why proper drafting is so important. Okay, I'm sorry, I seem to be a little bit of a dry throat today and a little bit of a cough left over. I think it's probably allergies. Don't worry, it's not COVID. I'm COVID clean. I haven't had COVID for, since August before last I had it, and I've been fine since that time. So let's start with some questions and comments from around the state of California. We'll start with this one out of Mission Viejo, California. And the person asked this question, which is actually, you're going to find out, is not the right question. Can an executor of a trust hire an attorney for themselves and charge the other beneficiary of the trust for part of the cost? So, let's unpack this. It says, Grandma passed and had a trust. Aunt, it says executor, but really successor trustee, hired a trust attorney and is charging me, granddaughter, beneficiary, for part of it. Can she do that? I didn't hire him or ask for him. Well, what's missing here is it's likely that the aunt hired an attorney to help her do the administration of the trust. It's the kind of thing I do on a regular basis for people. And that means that the trust would be paying for that attorney, advising the trustee of the trust who has the responsibility to administer the trust and may sometimes need legal advice about what they're supposed to do next and what actions they're supposed to take. That is an expense of the trust. And I think that's probably what the granddaughter is saying. I'm being charged for part of it. No, you're not. The trust is being charged for the expense of the attorney advising the trustee. That is a normal expense of administration. Really no different than if the trust hired a financial advisor to invest assets while the trust was pending, or hired a real estate agent or realtor to sell real estate of the trust, or hired an accountant to do the tax return for the trust. It's really no different. And it's not that the beneficiary didn't have to ask to have this person hired. This attorney's hired to assist the trustee to discharge the trustee's responsibilities. That's perfectly legitimate and not unexpected at all. Okay, so out of Riverside, California, someone said, if I was to pass away, can I have a notarized letter stating I want my parents to have full custody of my children? I wanted to know, in a situation where I'm no longer alive, can my parents get full custody of my children, or will my children's father automatically take full custody? Let me respond to this. First of all, I would ask, does the father have custody now? Did the father have custody taken away by a court so they're not entitled to custody? I would say, regardless of any of that, this person should have a nomination of guardians naming the parents as the first choice for guardians for the children. And I say that because you still want to do that, because if for whatever reason the children's father is unable or unwilling or incapable of taking over as their guardian, then you actually have nominated people who could act as their guardian. I mean, the father could have died, could have become incapacitated, could be incarcerated in jail, or may have been declared unfit by a court to be a parent. There's any number of things that could happen there. And it may very well be that the father of the children is not interested in being their guardian. It sounds like, I'm reading between the lines here, but it sounds like the mother and the father are not together, either never were together or they're not together at all, in which case having paperwork in place to take care of the situation where the father is not available to be the guardian, That's a smart move to make. And it's something that I regularly assess people with, situations just like that, even when I do full estate plans for them. We're coming up on the first break of the show today, and I hope you stay tuned for more Plan Your Estate Radio questions and comments from around the state of California. I plan on covering a lot of topics today, so you're probably going to hear something of interest to you somewhere along our show today. This is Attorney Bob Bergman, host of Plan Your Estate Radio, and I'll be back after a few short minutes break.
This is Plan Your Estate Radio with San Jose Estate Planning Attorney Bob Bergman on AM 1220 KDOW.
And welcome back to the second segment of the show today. Okay, let's see. Yeah, I think this is kind of a long one out of Bakersfield, but I think it helps to illustrate a lot of points along the way. It says, in 2014, my grandfather passed, and his other children sold their stake in the family house to my parents, with the understanding that they would in turn sell it to me for $70,000, with the intention that my family would live in the house and take care of my elderly disabled uncle in the house he was familiar with. And since then, my spouse and I have paid about $20,000 of the agreed-on $70,000, in addition to the annual property tax and insurance, billed to them, paid by us. But the property has remained in my parents' name. We all recently came to the realization it should have already been transferred to us because we looked into adding solar panels and realized we can't get along without being on the title or co-signing with my parents. Our limited understanding of Proposition 19 is that at this point, anything we do will trigger a tax reassessment considerably higher than what it currently is, but prior to 2021 would not have had. Since we don't have any documentation, didn't know we should act before Prop 19 went into effect, is there anything we can do to prevent a reassessment, or should we just bite the bullet? Well, I guess the first thing would be you could consider maybe moving into the property and making it your residence as well. And then, I don't know, in Bakersfield, in the county where Kern County, or maybe not Kern County. Whatever county Bakersfield's in, their assessor is going to have a particular way of looking at things if you were to move into the house. And then after you make it your residence, have your parents transfer it to you and then apply for parent-to-child transfer under Prop 19 to avoid a reassessment. Now, the sale price of $70,000 from 2014 tells me that the property's probably not valued really, really highly. It's Bakersfield. I don't really know. I don't know what property values are like down there. But it might be possible to avoid the reassessment issues of Prop 19. But this family is going to really need to sit down with legal counsel down there that knows how the assessor looks at things like this and could maybe structure the transaction in such a way that they could avoid Prop 19 rearing its ugly head and causing a 100% reassessment of the property. But at the very least, these people are going to have to move into the property and make it their personal residence to have anything happen. I think it's too late to try and go back and establish, there was supposed to be a sale back then. It didn't take place. I mean, you might try to go to court, but I think probably a court would say, no, we're not going to accept that. You're trying to kind of fix a problem now that was really created all those years ago, and it probably would not work. I think the short answer is likely there's nothing that can be done at this point. Inglewood, California. How can I challenge the validity of my father's trust? The validity of my father's trust when my sister had an attorney draw a trust she chose and had him sign it. So it says the trust my sister had my dad sign was done 1 month after he had a stroke. The trust was prepared by an attorney my sister chose for her interest, and now she's trying to disinherit 3 siblings out of 6. Okay, the first question I'd ask this person is, how old is your father? Second one is, was he mentally impaired by the stroke, or physically impaired, or both? And if he was mentally impaired, how do you know he was? Was there a doctor that determined that? Was he examined and determined to no longer have legal capacity to sign documents, things like that? Those are just kind of some of the preliminary questions that you would have in a situation like this. But the other thing is, if the father's elderly, it could be that there was actually elder financial abuse and overreaching by the sister who picked the attorney. It sounds like there's a claim that the sister dictated what the result would be and then induced dad to sign it. Presumably it was also notarized, but not necessarily, doesn't have to be notarized. And there could actually be elder financial abuse going on here. And it's all going to really line up with whether or not the father actually had legal capacity to make any changes like this. And I bring that up because ultimately it comes down to whether there's any legal capacity at all. Excuse me. Oh boy. It's allergy season. It rains, the pollen comes out, and everything goes crazy. So I guess the short answer is this might be able to be challenged, but there's a lot more information that need to be gathered. And especially if this is one of the people who's been disinherited, they may actually not have an incentive to kind of sit by. Because if they're truly disinherited, that means they were not left anything. If you weren't left anything, challenging the trust, if it says, oh, if you challenge the trust, you'd be disinherited. If you're already disinherited, challenging the trust doesn't have any particular downside, except maybe the expense of doing that, hiring someone to actually challenge it for you. But that's really what's going on here. I think that there's a lot more information that needs to be gathered by this family member, and especially in reference to whether or not the father actually had legal capacity to be making anything like a trust-based estate plan at this point. Now, I will say, saying he had a stroke doesn't necessarily mean he's mentally impaired. I've already shared this before, but I had a stroke 3 years ago in February, actually while visiting Disney World. And even though I suffered some fairly severe physical impairment on the left side of my body, it did not affect my mental capabilities in any way, shape, or form. I mean, listening to me, you can probably tell I do know what I'm talking about. I'm coherent. I can string sentences together and words together. I conjugate verbs properly most of the time. So having a stroke doesn't automatically mean that someone is incapable of doing any kind of estate planning like a will or a trust. So we're reaching the mid-show break. When we get back, we'll continue with more Plan Your Estate Radio with your host, estate planning attorney Bob Bergman. See you on the other side of the break.
This is Plan Your Estate Radio with San Jose estate planning attorney Bob Bergman on AM 1220 KDOW.
And welcome back to the third segment of our show today. I'm going to continue with some more questions and comments This is one out of San Jose, my town. And it's a straightforward question that has a fairly complicated answer. How can I place my home into a revocable living trust without the lender triggering a payment in full clause, which would be a due on sale clause? Well, the short answer is this. If you're transferring your personal residence into a revocable living trust, then the lender cannot trigger a due on sale clause in the loan, because transferring into a living trust, you're just changing the manner in which you're holding title to the property. You're not actually transferring the title of the property. You're just owning it in a different way. So it's not really an issue. I can tell you, in all the years that I have been doing estate planning, which is now about 40, I have never had a lender ever call in a loan or try to accelerate a loan because someone transferred a property into the revocable living trust. I think the reason why is you can transfer it into the trust, and the next day you could transfer it back out of the trust and be back exactly the way you were before. So it really is not a substantive transaction, meaning there hasn't been anything that really happened that really changed the ownership, because now it's just in your trust and it was not in your trust before. That's kind of the issue here. Technically, maybe they could, but like I said, I've never seen it happen. Never seen it happen in all the years I've been doing this, and I don't know of any of my colleagues that have seen that happen either. So I think it's kind of a situation that is not really a big deal. Okay, here we go. Out of Los Angeles. This is a doozy. My mother, 94 years of age, has two properties. Her primary residence here is in Los Angeles County, and another my brother lives in Ventura County. Both deeds say only community property, not community property with or without survivorship. My dad died 11 years ago. My mother did nothing to the deeds. She recently signed a transfer on death deed for each property, one for me, one for my brother. They were notarized and are ready to record. So my question is, were there any other steps we needed to make this happen with regard to my dad's death? I see there's an affidavit of surviving spouse. Is that something we should do before recording the transfer on death deeds? Were there other steps we should be doing? Secondly, as agent under a power of attorney for my mother, am I able to sign for her any of these intermediate documents that might need to be notarized? She signed the transfer on death deed in front of the notary and two witnesses herself, since I would be a beneficiary. Well, I would say steps need to be taken to clear dad's name off the title so that a transfer on death deed that's recorded actually can be effective when mom dies. That's kind of the short answer right there. If it was owned as community property, there are legal things that can be filed to clear the title into mom's name so that she is free to do the transfer on death deed. I would suggest, personally, doing those things and then setting up a trust to own those properties, and then have the trust be the one to distribute them. Because one thing that you can't absolutely guarantee is that the children, in this case, the two children, that they'll survive their mother. Even though she's 94 years of age, accidents happen, illness happens, any number of things could happen that could trigger someone actually not surviving a parent. And then the transfer on death deed does not solve anything. because it just comes right back into the parent's name. And if it's still titled in both parents' names and then the surviving parent dies, you could literally end up having two probates of the same property. One for the father's half that would pass to the mother's estate, and then for the mother's half plus the father's half going through her estate. So you could actually end up probating the property essentially 1.5 times. Not a good plan. This is why trust planning can be so useful. That's what this family should be doing, not trying to do planning with transfer on death deeds that are inherently inflexible and also can cause problems when dealing with lenders and title companies after someone's died. They may be hesitant to insure the title with a transfer on death deed, and lenders may be hesitant to loan on the property because they're not absolutely sure, just from looking at it, whether or not the person had clear title to transfer to the ultimate beneficiary. So I don't use TOD deeds. I don't use them at all because I find them to be inflexible and having the potential to create more problems than they're trying to solve. Okay, out of San Francisco, it says, my spouse and I are in the process of completing a revocable trust, and we're wondering, is it advisable to transfer our house title into that trust when my spouse has criminal and civil liability? My spouse is incarcerated and will start serving time. If it's not best to transfer it, should it be left in both our names or just one of us? Wow. There's a lot to unpack there. I would say the short answer is this. If the spouse already has civil liability, which suggests that there is a judgment taken against them or that they could be sued in a judgment taken against them, any attempt to transfer the house away from the spouse, the incarcerated spouse's name, would likely be treated by the court as an attempt to defraud a creditor. The time to do that, if you were going to have the spouse that's going to jail transfer everything to the spouse that's not going to jail, that would be to do that well before any criminal conviction or civil liability. Because once you actually have those things or you're sued, if you try and make a transfer then, that transfer can be overturned by the court as being an attempt to defraud a creditor. That includes putting your house title in your parents' name, your brother's name, your sister's name, your adult children's name, all those kinds of things. It's not going to work. It'll catch up to you. Everything will be overturned. And then you may actually end up being, in addition, charged for criminal fraud or attempted fraud. So make your problems even worse by doing that. Is that clear? Okay. So, question, San Diego, California. How can a power of attorney, advance healthcare directive, and will be revoked in California? So this is out of San Diego, California. Person says, in December 2023, my elder relative named me their financial and healthcare agents and powers of attorney, as well as the personal representative in their last will and testament. December 2023, so that's a few months ago. Since then, a hospice doctor diagnosed my loved one incapable of making healthcare or financial decisions, also stating the illness is irreversible. So that's a medical diagnosis that now this elder relative is incapacitated and unable to make any changes of any kind to the documents that they prepared in December of 2023. Says, recently a fairly new caretaker has gained the friendship and trust of my relative and is suggesting these documents be changed. If possible, I want to make sure this does not happen. Please advise. I don't know that you can prevent it from happening if this person brought in someone, brought in documents for the elder relative to sign and had a notary come in and notarize them. But that new caretaker is probably setting themselves up possibly for elder financial abuse. If you think this caretaker is trying to induce your elder relative to make changes that your relative is not legally capable of doing, I don't know, you might want to consider going to Adult Protective Services and telling them what's going on and see if they think that something could be done to go to this caretaker and tell them officially in a legal capacity to basically back off from trying to make changes. Because that kind of thing is not cool. And often it's caretakers or caregivers that take advantage of the elderly. And that's something we certainly don't want to have happen here. So we're coming up on the end of the third segment today. And when we come back, I'll take it home with another three or four questions and comments from around the state of California. This is Attorney Bob Brigman, and we'll finish up the show after this last commercial break.
Now, back to Plan Your Estate Radio with Attorney Bob Brigman.
And welcome back for the final segment of our show today. I have a few more questions and comments to cover here, and hopefully they will trigger some things for some of you out there where you might actually say, gee, that's the situation I'm in, or I know someone who's in a similar situation. And if that's the case, just be aware that it is very possible to do... to often solve a lot of these problems for families, especially if they don't wait until the last minute. I think that's probably the biggest thing right there, is letting things go on too long before dealing with them. And then sometimes opportunities have passed and it's too late to fix problems. The earlier somebody gets to me with their planning, the more likely we'll be able to do good, thorough planning. And especially not rushed planning. Occasionally I'm called in to do emergency planning where someone is terminally ill in the hospital or hospice, and they don't have much longer to live. And a lot of planning can be done if the person's still competent, but that's not the best way to do it, and that's not the best circumstances to do it. So I urge people, Don't actually wait until the last minute to do something. We don't know whether we have one more day. Nobody really knows whether they have one more day. And the time to take care of things is while you're still healthy, while you still have your mental capabilities, and while you still have the ability to actually think about and reflect on and actually plan for what's going to happen with your property and with your family and everything else. Now, out of Torrance, California, someone says, my son is autistic, 18 years of age, and he can't care for himself. If I filed for conservatorship, would that give me the right to get child support? Well, first of all, an 18-year-old might be your child, but is not a child as defined in the law. An 18-year-old is an adult. I think what the person's really asking about is, because the son is autistic and an adult, do they qualify for any kind of benefits? And would the parent qualify for benefits to assist in actually caring for the adult son who is disabled? Now, the short answer is yes. The son might qualify for Medi-Cal for health insurance, might qualify for SSI for income, might qualify for a number of things. And I don't know, since I don't practice in the area of conservatorship, I don't know if a formal conservatorship is actually necessary for the parent to set those things up. I know that for certain benefits, someone can be a designated payee for a disabled person without necessarily being a full-blown conservator. But certainly if conservatorship is pursued, that would mean the parent would actually have control over all finances and all healthcare matters for the autistic son. Okay, out of Ventura, California, this is kind of an interesting one. Person said, my son was named in a will, and it says what's left to him is for a special needs trust, but it's not set up. We talked to the attorney handling the will, and he said there's not one set up. Well, if the trust said turn things over to ABC Special Needs Trust, and that trust didn't exist, that could be a problem. But if the trust says in the trust create a special needs trust for this child, then the next advice from the attorney, or what's claimed to be from the attorney said, call an attorney that handles trusts and set one up and pay the money. And once the will is out of probate, then the trust that I set up would be funded with the monies from the probate. Since I set it up, I would choose to be who's in charge of the trust. Okay, I'm not really sure it would work that way. I haven't seen the will, but typically a will that sets up a special needs trust has all the provisions and who the trustee is and everything set forth in the will. That would be unusual. You should really never set up trusts through a will. I think it's a very bad practice because it now creates a bunch of issues. So I would not do that. I literally would not do that. So I'm going to cover one more here out of Santa Monica, California. Person says, I'm a beneficiary of my uncle's trust, and the sole possession he's listed is his home. I've never lived in this home. It's 70 years old, and has, what defects I know about are obvious to anyone. I'd like to sell the home, and I'd like to do it as is with no warranties. I'm in California. Is that possible to do in this situation? Answer is, absolutely. In fact, it's what I would expect if someone never lived in the home and couldn't know every little thing that's wrong with the home. Selling it as is, which means the buyer buys it, they do their own inspection, and they accept it or not based on their own inspection. That's perfectly legitimate. Nothing wrong with that. So that's all for our show today. Like I said, next Monday, my show is going to be pre-recorded, so because I'm going to be out of town. So until next 2 weeks from today, this is Attorney Bob Bergman, host of Plan Your Estate Radio, and have a great week.
You've been listening to Plan Your Estate Radio with estate planning attorney Bob Bergman. For more information on today's program or to schedule a consultation, visit lawbob.com. L-A-W-B-O-B, lawbob.com. Or call his office in San Jose, 408-247-0444. That's 408-247-0444. And be sure to tune in next week for more Plan Your Estate Radio with attorney Bob Bergman.
Opinions expressed in the preceding program do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, staff, or management of this station and are for informational purposes only and should not be construed to be legal, financial, or tax advice. Seek appropriate legal advice regarding your particular situation. Attorney Bob Bergman does not offer any guarantees with regard to the outcome of your legal matter. Prior results in other cases do not guarantee a similar outcome in your case. All rights reserved.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.